This episode contains some strong language and won't be suitable for everyone.
Ramon Sosa was on his way to the supermarket when his friend Mundo called him with some unexpected news. His wife was planning to have him murdered.
I was just driving and Mundo calls me and he says, "Hey, Pops, I think this lady wants to kill you." And I'm thinking, Mundo, what are you talking about? Because Mundo would like to joke around a lot. And I say, "You need to stop. Quit playing around. This is not a joke." And he said, "No." He told me what had happened the night before. And he said, "I talked to her and I saw that look in her eyes." And he said, "I've seen that look before on people that want to kill somebody. And she wants to kill you. She wants to have you killed."
Mundo was talking about Maria Sosa. She was known as Lulu, and she would soon be Ramon's ex-wife. The night before he rang Ramon, Mundo, not his real name, had overheard a conversation that disturbed him. He had decided to pass the details on to Ramon, a man he called Papi, meaning father in Spanish.
That's when I pulled over on the side of the road, and I was so upset. I mean, so many different emotions came through my head, from retaliation to going to the police. I didn't know what to do. And we talked for a little bit, me and Mundo, but it was Mundo's idea. He said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep having conversations with her because I already told her that I already have the people that can do the job. And I'm going to record everything on my phone and see how far she's willing to go with this." And that's how it all started. And every time they would have conversations, I would meet with Mundo that evening and listen to their conversations. And let me tell you, I still get chills thinking about those conversations from Lulu and how she wanted me dead.
As Lulu schemed to be rid of Ramon for good, Mundo made the split-second decision to act as a double agent. I'm Alice Fiennes.
And I'm Poppy Damon. You're listening to Suicide, a furrowed brow production about death fraud through the ages. Suicide is the act of faking your own death, and this is episode 6, Gone Guy.
Gone Guy is a story about schemers and survivors. It's also about friendship and loyalty.
Can you hear me? Perfect. Okay. Can you hear me now? My name is Ramon Sosa. I am the author of I Walked on My Own Grave, a true crime story.
Ramon spoke to us from his son's house in Los Angeles. He left the video on while we talked. He has dark eyes and cropped hair. His muscular build recalls his days as a boxer and then boxing coach. To begin with, he took us back to his early life. He was born on the 1st of June, 1967, in Puerto Rico.
I was about maybe around 7 years old, moved to New York City, lived there as a young man, moved to Texas as a teenager, and lived there basically for the rest of my life. A few times I moved out, but I always came back to Texas.
His father, who was a wrestler, encouraged him in sports, and he began boxing as a child back in Puerto Rico.
One of the boxing trainers said, "When you get a little older, I'm going to teach you how to box." And sure enough, I remember the first time he put some gloves on me, that was it.
For Ramon, boxing is like playing chess.
People that watch it, they just want to see two guys just beat themselves up until somebody just gets knocked out and that kind of stuff. But actually, boxing, to me, it's like an art. It's a science. You have to outthink your opponent and find their weaknesses. And at the same time, you got hit and not get hit.
Did you have a boxing name? Did you have like a nickname in the ring or anything?
Yeah, as a pro, they used to call me the Puerto Rican Express. That was the name of that I got when I first turned pro. As a child growing up in amateurs, we used to call each other names and stuff like that. But I don't know how that name came upon when my first fight. Somebody said, "Oh, you like the little Puerto Rican Express."
Ramon got married to his first wife and they had 3 children together in Texas. The marriage didn't last, but their separation was amicable.
We went our own ways, but always understanding that our kids would always keep us bonded. And it has always been like that. I have 2 sons, Mitchell, Chris, and then a daughter, Mia.
In 2007, Ramon met Lulu Durantes. He had been divorced for several years, and now that his children were older, he was open to the possibility of romance.
I met her in a suburb of Houston called Woodlands. It was a Mexican restaurant that I had went to that evening. And then after 10 in the evening, they would turn in the restaurant into like a nightclub. I remember walking in dressed sharp and had my little nice sweater on, looking nice. And the place was packed. But anyway, I just saw her on the dance floor with this guy dancing. And I said, wow, man, she's a very, very attractive lady, young lady. And the way she danced, I first thought I thought she was Puerto Rican or from the Caribbean, because she danced such stuff really, really well. And I just couldn't kind of keep my eyes off of her.
A painful chance encounter gave Ramon the opportunity to talk to the woman who had caught his eye. The dancing lady stepped on Ramon's foot. She was wearing heels.
It hurt, you know, I'm not going to lie. So I bent down to kind of feel it, see if my toe was still there. And she was saying, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And all I could say when I got up and I looked at her, I said, well, can we dance? And that was it. We started dancing and we danced the night away.
Ramon and Lulu talked until late, right up until closing. Outside, they swapped numbers. According to Ramon, it was love at first sight. But as it turned out, the pair also had a lot in common.
Lulu was divorced and had two children. She was living in the United States on a tourist visa, cleaning houses to make ends meet and crossing the border periodically to re-enter as a tourist.
Even though Ramon was heavily involved in boxing and often on the road, he and Lulu began a relationship.
At the beginning, she treated me like a king. She supported my boxing and she even helping with the kids. And so it was very nice dating. And I finally asked her to marry me in the year 2009. I remember her started crying. And I said, no, it's going to be okay. But all she did was cry and thank me because she knew her life was going to change now. She said that I came here to find something that was best for me and my kids. You have been so nice to me and my family and my kids. I just want to be the best wife that I can be. And let me tell you, like a week or two later, she was already planning on how soon we were supposed to get married. That's how bad she wanted it.
The wedding was a small courthouse affair. It was traditional and formal. Lulu wore a white gown. Ramon wore a suit. They invited a few friends and family members, but there were notable absences.
I'm going to tell you one thing that I really, really missed. It was the fact that my kids did not go to my wedding. Unfortunately, at that time, we were, you know, going through difficulties.
Ramon's children didn't like Lulu, and they didn't approve of the marriage.
Right after we got married in the courthouse, her mother came and gave me a hug and just whispered in my ear, ahora ya es tu problema, now she's your trouble, and walked away. It was one of those things like, why would she even say that? Something, you know, crazy like that on our wedding night.
At the time, did you think she was saying it in a kind of joking way? Or did you actually, even then, you thought, funny thing to say?
I thought it was a funny thing. You don't say that kind of stuff, especially about your daughter. Man, and I thought again, well, maybe she's just saying in a funny kind of way too. But that always stayed in my mind. And then after we were going through all the issues, I said, oh, now I understand what she was trying to say to me. You know, she was trying to give me the heads up way back, right after our marriage.
For Ramon, the next red flag appeared immediately after the wedding. Lulu started the paperwork for her green card, and Ramon feared that this showed she was in the marriage for the wrong reasons. Lulu, on the other hand, reasoned that this was merely so that she could be secure and stay with Ramon without making frequent trips across the border.
How would you describe Lulu? How would those around her describe it?
She was always be helpful with everybody. If people were washing dishes, she would get right there, start washing dishes for them. At the family gatherings, she wants to be the one that's helping with everything. And one time, I'm over here having a drink, and before my drink is even done, she gets me another drink. And people will see that kind of stuff like, wow. I had friends of mine say, like, how do you find somebody like that? She was very outgoing and loved talking to people and making people laugh and dressed very nice all the time. So when we walked into a place, you always wanted people like to notice her, like, wow, here I am.
Ramon says that the problems in the marriage really began with a disagreement about the discipline of Lulu's teenage son. He was 16 and was pushing back on Ramon's authority in the home. He had no father figure in his life, and Ramon was concerned about him. But Lulu saw things differently.
I would tell him just like this, I will help you. I would try to do whatever I can to help you and everything, any kind of way I can. But in this house, there's only one man, and that's just is me. I'm the one that puts a roof over your head, clothes on your back, and food in your stomach. And that's how it's going to be. This is how it's going to be. So it all started with him. And then when I try to discipline him, and sometimes she would get in the way and of course, be on his side. When we were alone, I would always tell her, look, when I discipline him, you need to, let me discipline him, because once he sees that you take up for him, he knows that what I say doesn't mean anything.
Alarm bells rang for Ramon elsewhere too. Lulu and Ramon opened a boxing and fitness gym in their hometown of Woodlands. It did well. Ramon ran classes and worked with clients. Lulu was in charge of administration.
By this point, the couple had a new, spacious home and could afford to travel on holiday together. But money, Ramon says, changed Lulu. He started to suspect that she was skimming off the top of their shared business.
When I looked at the book, sometimes I would see that the many people that were going to the gym and then the bottom line was not matching. And I would ask her, look, what's going on here? And every time I would come up with those questions, she would always say, don't worry about it. The business is doing good. You need to take care of what's going on out there. I'll take care of this.
So you had the money tension. You had the tension with the son. What sort of really made it untenable?
She started spreading rumors about me, bad rumors around me about me, especially to parents of kids that I trained, that I was an alcoholic, that I was abusive to her, to her kids, that I wasn't the person that they thought I was.
Despite all of this, Ramon still wanted the marriage to work.
We went to family counseling, but from what I understood, was she was going behind my back and telling everybody her side of the story, that I was, again, it was abusive to her, abusive to her kids, that I was a drunk, that I was embezzling money with my nonprofit. These were all lies. So she was just building this case to use against me. And in 2015, she filed for divorce.
Although they had formally begun the process of separation, the pair still worked together at the gym and lived together. Fortunately, Ramon had friends around him, one in particular.
Let me go back to the year 2000. There was a young man named Mundo. He walked into my gym. He was kind of physically overweight, kind of short guy, Hispanic. I would say he was in his early 20s at the time.
Mundo told Ramon his life story. He was a former gang member who had engaged in violence. He had just completed a prison sentence, and he wanted to fulfill a dream of learning to box. Ramon helped him make a fresh start. At this point, he was running a non-profit organization called Young Prospects, helping kids in his neighborhood.
I kind of took a feel for the kid, and I became sort of like his mentor. And then he became my right-hand man with the boxing. For many years, he would always help me in training kids, and he even helped mentor other kids. My sons looked up to him. They all got together, and he would tell them all kinds of stories, I guess, from growing up, being a gang, and all the issues that he went through, so they wouldn't go through the same path. I used to tell people he was like my third son.
Mundo and Ramon lost touch when Ramon moved away. But years later, Mundo walked into Ramon's Woodlands gym, and they reconnected.
Just picked up right where we had left off. After the gym was closed, he would stay there and clean it for me and open it for me on Saturdays. And Lulu kind of at the beginning was like kind of leery about him because I had told him his background. And she kind of like, I don't know about this guy being around the gym. She thought that he was going to be a bad influence on the gym. But it was just the opposite. He did nothing but help. And then he became close to us, to me and Lulu. In the year 2015, where we were going through the divorce, Mundo knew what was going on. And it was a very difficult divorce because Lulu wanted everything. Lulu just was at this point in life in a divorce where, things were not going her way and she was having a hard time. So she was looking for anything to get me out or take everything from me.
At this point, Mundo overheard the conversation that would change everything.
One evening, Ramon wasn't there at the gym. Mundo overheard Lulu talking about a gym member whose family in Mexico was rumored to chop people up for money. Mundo was alarmed to hear her say something like, wow, maybe we can use him.
Mundo just said, hey, you need to be careful what you say around people because you don't know who's listening. And later on that evening, when everybody was already gone, it was just him and Lulu. He walked up to Lulu. She was by herself. And he told her, is this about Ramon? And she goes, yes. And she said, I wish they would just take him away. I wish he would just go away. Just go. And Mundo said, what are you talking about? He did the pistol sign. He said, you mean go away like this? And she said, yeah, go away like that with the, you know, like sign or the pistol sign. And that's when Mundo, he told her right there on the spot, I have the people that can do the job. And she said, oh, really? Okay, well, let's talk tomorrow. He was looking out for me. And then the next day, Mundo calls me.
And now we're back to where we began this episode. Mundo had told Lulu that he could help her arrange her husband's execution. Ramon, driving to the supermarket, was shocked by Mundo's news.
You might be wondering why Lulu was so quick to involve Mundo in her murderous scheme, given his closeness to Ramon. Well, he had been back on the scene for a little while now, and perhaps by now she saw him as part of the family. Perhaps, too, his criminal past convinced her that he had the right connections for the job. Either way, Lulu quickly placed her trust in Mundo.
Ramon and Mundo decided they had no option but to keep up this charade. They had to make sure that Lulu believed she already had her hitman lined up so she wouldn't hire anyone else for the job. They also began to build a case for the police. Mundo and Ramon reported everything to their local homicide department, and they'd advise them to keep gathering evidence.
Mundo told the police that Lulu confided in him. She claimed to be at the end of her tether. Here's Mundo in a police interview.
She's like, I can't go on like this. You know, every day he comes home drunk, tries to touch me or whatever, and I'm just listening. And then she told me, I wish the cops would pick him up or he would just disappear.
For the next few weeks, Mundo hid his phone in his pocket and secretly recorded his conversations with Lulu. Sometimes they would huddle in the car under cover of night. At other times, Mundo went over to the house that Lulu and Ramon had shared. By this point, Ramon had moved out. Later, he would meet with Ramon and they would listen to the recordings together.
Mundo's idea was that he told her that he had hired two hitmen already. And these hitmen were obviously made up names. He called one Paco and the other one John Boy. And Lulu believed that these were the two hitmen that were going to have me killed. And one time, Mundo told her, look, I'm going to meet with you and I'm going to be texting with John Boy and Paco at the same time because we're going to get this thing going. They have a gun and they need at least $200 down payment to get this thing going. And sure enough, Mundo met with her, and Lulu was there watching Mundo talking to or texting back and forth with John Boy and Paco. But she had no idea that John Boy and Paco was me.
So you were your own hitman?
Yes, I was playing my own hitman. I had bought a track phone, and Mundo was texting that phone.
So Ramon was on one end of the track or burner phone, and Mundo was on the other. He made sure that Ramon could text his part convincingly.
And Mundo even taught me the street language. He told me exactly how to text, you know, so it was like I was a street guy.
It was enough. Lulu came up with a down payment. In this real exchange between Mundo and Lulu, revoiced here by actors, they discuss financing the hit.
I don't have the money right now.
But after, like, I'm saying the only thing that they'll worry about is the operation. They'll want a deposit right now. It doesn't have to be the money. They just want something of value. You already showed them with the $100 that you want them to do it.
Of course. I have the watch. It's the only thing I have. I have to look for the gold chain that he has. I can give them the wedding ring. It's gold. I have his other things that are gold.
Mm-hmm.
Those they can sell off.
Okay, just go figure it out. What I'm saying is, if you don't have cash, give them things of value.
Okay.
I'm playing middleman. That's all I'm doing, you know. You want to get me out of the way and deal with them? Shit, fuck it. Go ahead, I don't care.
No, because I don't know, Mundo. That's why I'm asking you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you were to tell me, give a kickboxing class. Yes, dude, but well, why not?
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
The only person on my side right now is you.
Yeah.
It's a really fucked up thing.
No, no. Don't worry about it. Hell yeah. Shit.
This takes balls.
But you just need to be calm. Don't lose patience. I know that you're tired of hearing your shit and everything, but the thing is, be patient. Look, go home, check what you have, and some shit, 3-4 days, things can change. That's all I can say.
These recordings would serve as evidence in the case against Lulu. The police eventually released them to Ramon, who shared them with us.
Well, it's just that even with the small bit you're offering, they know that you're serious for them to kill him, so everything is okay.
Yes, it's definite to have them do it. I really don't care, actually.
Uh-huh.
And if they're worried I'm going to pay, I'm going to pay.
What was the price?
Mundo had told her that the job was going to take, it was like $14,000. So he told her, look, they charge a lot more for this kind of job. But because they're my friends, they're willing to do it for $14,000. And Lulu said, look, I don't have that money right now. I can give you a down payment. I think she gave him like $2,000. And then also she said, I can give you some jewelry. And when he dies, you can keep his vehicle.
I feel more relaxed.
The calm is settling in.
Yes, definitely. And you?
No, well, it's nothing new.
You're going to cry like Magdalena.
Ah, you're the one that's going to cry.
You're going to miss me.
You'll cry for him. Ramon, ¿por qué?
Asshole.
They took him so young. Hey, Lulu, about the, what's it called?
What?
The watches. Hadn't you said it was his company's property and you had them?
Yes. Do you want one? Yes, I'll give you one.
Shit. Better idea? The guys can accept the watches. That's what I was thinking, so you don't have to give him cash.
Oh, okay. Tell them that he wears a good watch, okay?
Uh-huh. What does he have?
He has a Movado.
A Movado?
Yeah.
Shit. Fucking Movados are expensive.
Have them take the watch off of him.
Ramon sat and listened as his wife coldly offered his watch and his car in exchange for his murder.
The divorce was not going her way, so this is her way out. And another thing, she knew how much money I'm worth with all of my insurance and retirement and everything, all the money that I have saved up. And she told Mundo, look, he needs to be dead by this date before the divorce is finalized. Because if not, they are going to give everything to his kids and I won't get anything.
Ramon is convinced that for Lulu, their marriage was all about securing a green card.
And to me, it was like, oh, she had a plan from the beginning. She just wanted to become an American citizen, get everything she can out of me, and then move on and stay here legally, you know?
Ramon and Mundo had given their recordings to the police, who were now orchestrating the operation. Mundo arranged for Lulu to meet an undercover police officer playing the role of hitman. Lulu paid one installment of the $14,000 fee in jewelry.
And the jewelry that she gave him was my jewelry that I had in my home. So she was using my stuff as a down payment. And she went and got money out of the bank. And she, the whole time, she's being recorded, audio and video.
And in the meantime, you're pretending to not know anything. Is that right?
It was like the movie Sleeping with One Eye Open. That's how I basically slept, because she didn't know that I already knew that her plan was to have me kill. I couldn't sleep. Any little noise in the home, I would just be startled when I was in the bed thinking like, oh, you know, somebody's trying to open the door, somebody's trying to do something bad to me. I didn't know the whole time that if she had a plan B or C. My thing was like, what if she already, if this doesn't work, she already has talked to somebody else to take me out.
Ramon had to feign ignorance, all the while alert.
I had to keep everything as normal as possible, even going to the gym. And I would have to see her because we still had the business together and I couldn't tell one person.
Mid-scheme and before Ramon moved into another home, Lulu had actually called the police on him. She'd accused Ramon of violence.
She called the police on me saying that she feared for her life, she feared for her kid's life, and she wanted me out. It's so demeaning to me. It's so shameful that I had to have a cop escort me out of my own home with a little bag.
The police that escorted Ramon from his home were unaware of the plot against his life because the operation to catch Lulu was covert.
And when I walk out, I see all these people in my front yard. Of course, I lived in a cul-de-sac. Everybody looking at me like, wow, man, this is horrible that this man, what he's doing. And I look up when I'm out of, you know, in my car, and I see them all looking down from the window in the second story, just laughing, you know, laughing, having a good time because they got their way. I'm out of the house.
Ramon was growing desperate. After the break, the police make their move.
The police called me into the office. A DA was there, the district attorney, the police, other agencies were there. They told me, we have enough evidence to arrest Lulu, but we don't want to take a chance on going to trial and have one of the jurors feel sorry for her. We want this to be a slam dunk case. She's a beautiful woman. She's never been in trouble. She's a mother. She's known in the community. And the plan that we have, we're going to basically fake your death and show her a picture of you dead. And let me tell you, I couldn't process that in my mind. I said, what are you talking about? Fake my death. He said, yeah, we're going to take a picture of you dead. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. After all this that I'm going through, now I got to do this?
We contacted the prosecutor on the case. He consulted with the police during the investigation and undercover sting operation.
My name is Kelly Blackburn. I'm the trial bureau chief here at the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office.
Kelly says he has worked on about 20 murder-for-hire cases in his career as a prosecutor. Of these, 5 have included staged deaths.
The reason that we staged the murder of Ramon is because whenever you're working a murder-for-hire case, it's always preferable, if possible, to stage the murder of your victim and document it with photos and or video. By carrying out the staged murder to the very end, and then by showing the defendant documentation of that murder, you take away any defense they may try and raise after the fact. You get to see and document their reaction as they are looking at photos of the murder. It can be very powerful evidence for trial, and it also gives me a good sense of the type of person I'm dealing with.
Essentially, the police needed as much evidence as possible about Lulu's intentions. They believed that if they could show Lulu was grateful or relieved that Ramon was dead, then they could prove that she had really believed she was arranging his murder. They feared that she might otherwise slip through the net and claim that she hadn't thought her husband would truly be killed.
For Ramon, all this was a lot to take in.
I remember the DA pulled out pictures, actual pictures of dead people with bullet wounds to their head, with half their heads blown out.
This wasn't just a macabre spectacle. They were looking for an image they could use as a reference.
And they all sat there and they said, let's pick one that we were going to do. And I'm like, oh, in my mind, I'm thinking, this is crazy. So they finally picked one, and that's the one that they chose to kind of, I guess, what I was supposed to look like, copy it, basically.
The police instructed Ramon to go home, pack some clothes, and then return to the station. After that, they began the process of turning him into a corpse.
I came into the office, and then they put the makeup on, and I thought they knew what they were doing. And couldn't find out. These guys had just watched this on a YouTube video the day before. Some little girls, you know, playing with making fake bullet wounds on their head or whatever, but they made it look right.
The police drove Ramon to a shallow grave they had prepared. They instructed him to strip down to his underwear, and then they began taking photographs.
I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. I told him, Lulu is good with pictures. She works with her brother-in-law that owns a photography studio, and I don't know if she's going to fall for this. And let me tell you something, Poppy, me laying on that grave site, taking those pictures and posting, all I can hear is that clicking of the camera nonstop. And my thoughts that came through my head was my kids. What are they going to think when they see this? What are they going to feel? My mother, my father.
After this grim photo shoot, Ramon was confined to a hotel for 3 days. He wasn't allowed to contact anyone.
So your family genuinely didn't know where you were?
Yeah, nobody.
For those 3 days.
Yeah, nobody knew.
So you really had disappeared because they, for it all to work. So yeah. They must have been going out of their mind with worry too. Your phone's not answering.
Yeah, and the thing is that they had Mundo, not even Mundo knew. Nobody knew.
While Ramon was at the hotel, an undercover officer masquerading as the hitman, met with Lulu to convince her that Ramon was dead. He sat in his car and produced the picture of Ramon in the shallow grave, shirtless, eyes closed, gun wound at his temple, and blood streaking down his chest.
They told him that I have fought real hard, but they were able to pin me down and kill me. And they showed her the picture. She just laughed, you know, when they showed her the picture of me dead. She just laughed and had the nerve to ask, so he's not getting up, right? And he goes, no, he's dead. He's gone. And then she just walks out of the car, go happy. The next day, the police officer show up at my business at the gym, and she's there. And she had no idea they had been watching her. The whole time they had undercover people around the gym watching her, all her steps, when the time she got there, everything. And the two officers wants to speak to her. They were doing like a missing person report on me.
Lulu played dumb. She'd already called Ramon's family to ask if they'd seen him, and she'd spoken to some of Ramon's friends who'd called her when they were unable to reach him. She had told these friends that she didn't know where Ramon was.
She acted like, oh, I don't know what's going on. I mean, I've been looking for him. I called his sisters. They don't want to talk to me. His friends don't know where he's at.
3 days later, the police showed up again.
Hola. Hello. Habla inglés?
Sí.
Okay, I'm Detective Martinez. I'm looking for Miss Sosa.
Okay, give me a moment.
The police told Lulu that she was under arrest for solicitation to commit capital murder.
Okay, Miss Sosa, stand up, please. You're under arrest. Okay, you're under arrest.
Why?
Okay, ma'am, it's okay. Stay back. We have a warrant.
I need to.
Excuse me.
I need to talk to my. Háblale, por favor. Yeah, háblale, por favor, a Julio. Háblale, por favor, a Julio.
Espérenme.
No. We have a warrant.
Un momento. Un momento.
Okay, no, vámonos.
Later on, Ramon was able to watch that moment on body cam footage the officers had recorded.
They did it in front of her mother and her daughter. And the look on her face, like she was like, well, you know, what's going on? She knew exactly what was going on. And there was actually people, customers in the gym still working out, and they took her out handcuffed.
At the station, Lulu continued to plead ignorance.
You have a warrant related to the murder of your husband, Crimson Station.
What are you talking about?
I'm not going to discuss it with you. I tried to talk with you, and you said you want to speak. You only want to speak with your lawyer, so I'm not going to discuss it with you. But I can tell you that's the warrant. Criminal solicitation on capital murder.
You can. All right.
Okay.
With Lulu in custody, Ramon could leave his hiding place. The police dropped him off at his car, where he switched on the radio.
The first thing I hear on the radio is the news, and they're talking about me. How they're going to have a press conference about this lady in the Woodlands who has just been arrested for solicitation of capital murder. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I call my parents. And let me tell you, Poppy, it was the most horrific sound that I've ever heard in my life. When my father answers the phone and he goes, what's going on? Where you at? What's going on? And I hear in the background my mother, she's just crying and crying, that kind of cry you hear at funerals. Because, see, I have two sisters, but I'm the only son. And she thought that her only son was dead. And later on, I come to find out that the way she found out about the news was that she was at my sister's house. And she walked in and she saw this on TV that they were showing the news. And her English was kind of, she don't speak very well, you know, in English. And in her mind, she thought that they showed Lulu, she thought that it was actually that she had killed me. She didn't know that it was a solicitation of capital murder. So she took it as I was dead. And I mean, I drove straight to her. I remember her laying on the couch when I walked in. It was the look on my dad's face and my mother. When she saw me, she tries to get up. And I said, no, and I just ran over there, gave her a hug. And she wouldn't let go of me. She was just hugging me and crying and crying and she couldn't believe that I was alive. Then my dad was crying. Everybody was just upset, and I had to call to get an ambulance, you know, because I didn't know what was going to happen. My mother she couldn't catch her breath.
Ramon rang his kids to explain what had happened. They all lived some distance away. At that point, he wasn't on the best terms with his children. He says Lulu treated them badly.
And my daughter, she was in early teens, and she just cried and cried and cried. It was a horrible feeling.
These days, Ramon no longer has a gym. He's engaged to be married again, and he spends his time speaking about the domestic abuse of men. He says he wants to dispel the notion that men cannot be victims. He also wrote a book about his ordeal entitled I Walked on My Own Grave.
I chose that title because I literally walked on my own grave. And I tell people there's only two people that I know that walked out of their own grave alive, and that was Jesus Christ and me.
Lulu then goes on trial. How was it for you watching her be tried for this crime?
Before her first hearing, they walked her out in chains and in that suit, the prison suit. It was sad because I remember how she used to dress all the time, how she used to always buy fancy clothes. Look how she ended up. She never looked at me once, ever. All the hearings that we went to, she never did.
Throughout the proceedings, Ramon was on edge. He feared retaliation from someone close to Lulu, and he kept several guns at hand.
Mundo's recordings were played in court. In this clip, Lulu describes a financial motive. After his death, she would have received Ramon's pension.
He's not going to take me off the insurance or off the...
Off the pension?
Off the pension. It'll be $2,000 they'll give me monthly. And for the insurance, it goes to his kids.
Oh, okay.
It will only go to his kids.
Uh-huh.
But I'll get the pension.
Lulu would have faced a life sentence at trial. In 2016, she pleaded guilty to second-degree solicitation of capital murder in exchange for 20 years in prison. At the time, her attorney, Ite Bond, was reported to have said that Lulu stood up in court and admitted she made a mistake and has accepted her punishment. Ite Bond added, "That is more reflective of her character than this series of bad decisions that put her in prison. From her perspective, she was in an unmanageable, abusive relationship and she wanted to get out and away from him. She should have sought protection from a divorce attorney and not gone off into the deep end and come up with that plan." We reached out to Ite Bond for comment. He did not respond.
Prosecutor Kelly Blackburn told us about building a case against Lulu. Here he refers to her by her given name, Maria.
Once Maria reacted the way that she did to seeing Ramon lying in a hole with a gunshot wound to his head, there was no defense that she was ever going to be able to raise at trial. She could never come back after the fact and say that she was just joking and never meant for him to be killed. She couldn't say that she really wanted to back out of the plan. She couldn't contact the hitmen or that she felt pressure to go forward with the plan because she was now in fear of her life. Once she viewed those photos and reacted the way that she did, it was clear beyond any doubt what her intent was. And the joy and relief that she showed told me that I was dealing with a complete and utter psychopath. We had the undercover officer ask Maria why she wanted Ramon dead. The undercover officer specifically asked Maria, "Why do you want him dead? Is he beating you or is he hurting you or something?" Maria's response to that question, without hesitation, was, "No, he's just making my life miserable." He wouldn't give her the divorce that she wanted. He still loved her, and she was also about to lose the boxing and training gym that they started together. The undercover officer even asked Maria if she wanted them to beat Ramon up or just scare him a little bit, not kill him. And her response to that was unequivocally, "No, I want him dead."
Ramon again.
At the sentencing hearing, they let me speak, and I forgave her for everything she did. I mean, I had to. There was just so much anger inside of me that was the only way of me releasing everything. And I told her that there's not one person in this courtroom that is perfect. We have all made mistakes, but we have to pay the consequences. What she did was wrong. Hopefully she learned from everything she did. And it kind of released. It's kind of like a balloon. Just when the air just, I can breathe now.
At one point, after Lulu had been taken into custody, Ramon received a knock on the door. It was a detective who told him that his ex-wife was filing rape charges against him.
All of a sudden, this is her last card she pulls out and files rape charges on me. I was so upset. You know, I didn't know what. I was just going through so many emotions. I called my attorney and he said, "No, I don't know, worry about it. You know, I understand what she's trying to do. She's just, you know, trying anything right now to try to get out, but it's not going to work."
Eventually, these charges were thrown out.
Every claim of abuse made by Maria Sosa was thoroughly investigated by our office and by law enforcement. But for the self-serving statements of Maria Sosa, there was never any credible evidence found to establish that Ramon ever abused Maria in any way. One of the allegations of abuse made by Maria was presented to a grand jury, which also found the allegations not to be credible. In fact, the best evidence that Ramon never abused Maria came from her own words during the undercover operation. While speaking to the undercover officer, who was acting as a hitman, Maria specifically stated that Ramon was not abusive to her.
Lulu is still in prison. In September 2020, she was denied parole. The Texas Department of Criminal Justice reasoned that her offense contained elements of brutality, violence, assaultive behavior, or conscious selection of the victim's vulnerability, such that she poses a continuing threat to public safety. Her next parole review is scheduled for September 2021.
What's life like for you now?
It's beautiful. I have two beautiful grandsons. My kids are my life. I'm in engaged with somebody. I found somebody that it's been great to me. I sold my business. I'm very, very grateful for my family, and that's what keeps me going.
Today, Ramon speaks out against violence, sometimes giving talks at conferences that are targeted specifically at men.
Ramon told us that he feels he learned something about domestic abuse through this experience. Lulu spread lies about him, she isolated him from friends and family, and she made him feel dependent on her.
There was so much more that happened that I don't talk about. What I do now is talk about that domestic abuse happens to men too, and that's what happened to me. People are like, sometimes like, I mean, come on, you're an ex-professional boxer. How can you let somebody do that to you? And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because I want men and women, when they read my book, to understand that it does happen to men.
Do you think that there's a sort of image of masculinity that is questioned by the idea that a woman can be manipulative and abusive?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because it's very important for men to know that just because you're going through domestic abuse doesn't make you less of a man if you report it, if you come forward to get help. Because that's how I felt. I feel like, why should I go to the police with it? First of all, I didn't think they were going to believe me. Second of all, being ashamed. Third of all, is like you say, masculinity. I mean, I can't take care of my own business in my home. But a lot of men stay in these types of relationship for the same reason that women do. It might be financially. It might be because they have kids together. It might be because the abuser is just a good manipulator. Those people that are abusive, whether they're women or men, should be, you know, charged to the full extent of the law.
There are differences in the ways that men and women experience domestic abuse. Charity Women's Aid suggests that women experience higher rates of severe abuse and repeated victimization than male victims. Femicide rates are deplorable across the globe too. While the majority of non-domestic homicide victims are men, the UN estimates that 137 women are killed every day by a family member or intimate partner.
In what's been described as a shadow pandemic, calls to domestic abuse helplines increased fivefold in some countries during COVID-19 lockdowns. And yet, we also still have a major problem with women and girls not being believed when they make claims of abuse or assault. It just so happens that in this case, the victim was a man who appeared to be able to handle himself, and the perpetrator was his wife. Ramon is a boxer, and he's physically strong. So in some ways, the story plays with our expectations about victimhood and what that looks like.
You said you're engaged now. Do you feel fully healed from the experience? Because a lot of people would never trust anyone again.
I think that, no, I would never be healed from this. It'll always be in the back of my mind. And the person that I'm with now, she's in the medical business, and she kind of psychologically understands what happened. And we talk about it sometimes. Sometimes she doesn't like to talk about it too much, because it's like, when is this going to be over? This is. But it's part of my life. It'll be always be part of my life. Trust is still an issue sometimes, but it's just something that I work on every day. She's a wonderful person. I don't have no reason to not trust her at this time.
Just finally, Mundo saved your life. Are you still friends? And how is he doing?
We have done several shows together of crime shows with Mundo. Mundo has a book also called My Son Mundo. We have not been close like we used to be. That's another thing that I've done. I've been kind of apart from a lot of people, even people that help me. And sometimes I think in the back of my mind, I just don't want nothing to happen to them. If something happens, it'll happen to me. I just hate for something to happen to them years after all this stuff has happened.
You have to remember that Mundo used to be in a gang. Here, he went undercover for the police. He told ESPN last year, even if I tried to make people understand that it's to save my friend's life, it's still seen as snitching, ratting. It's not hard to imagine that all this could have ended badly for Mundo.
I know he gets upset because I don't reach out to him like I used to, but he would always be in my heart. But at the same time, I just sometimes just like to be alone most of the time.
5 years on, what does Ramon take from this brush with fate?
Like the saying that goes, everything that shines, how does it go? Everything that shines is not gold or something like that. Because that's what she was. She was a beautiful person and attractive. You'd think that she had everything going, but in reality, no. She was a very bad person. Very bad person. So yeah, I think that was the moral of the story. You gotta be careful that beauty is not everything.
Suicide is created and produced by Poppy Damon and by Alice Fiennes. The lead producer of the series is Alice Fiennes, and this episode was written by me, Poppy Damon. Audio production and music are by Mike Migas. Additional production support was provided by Elizabeth Nakano.
In this episode, you heard from Ramon Sosa and Kelly Blackburn. The secret recordings were revoiced by Tamika Adams, who played Lulu, and David Rodriguez, who played Mundo. These recordings were translated by Catherine Gray and Pedro Esquivel Puck. Ramon Sosa's book, I Walked on My Own Grave, was published by Million Dollar Pen, Inc. in 2019.